Welcome to The Lob by These Football Times, the home of long-form storytelling online. Let us loop you through the ages of football. So sit back, learn, and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to The Lob podcast from These Football Times. I'm Jim Hart, your host. Today we have, for the new year, 2017, quite an interesting topic to discuss on this pod, which is safe standing, which has been an issue that's being talked about more and more in England. We put together kind of an all-star cast of folks, I believe, that can discuss this topic. First off, we have Pete Dakin from the Football Supporters Foundation, the FSF. Welcome to the show, Pete. How are you?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, great. Thanks. Great. Just reeling from my overeating, overdrinking, and overindulging in watching football over the Christmas period.
Well, that is one of the great things about England is we get plenty of football over the holidays. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Pete, and what makes you an expert on safe standing.
My day job isn't in anything to do with football. I run a little marketing agency by trade, but I'm a volunteer for the Football Supporters Federation. And in that capacity, I have been coordinating the Safe Standing campaign for a good few years now. The Safe Standing campaign, you can think of like the Rebel Alliance in Star Wars. It's a group of ragtag individuals from all parts of the country and indeed the world. All age groups, creeds, colours, shapes. Basically, since standing was got rid of in England following the Taylor Report back in the late 80s, early 90s, there has always been a hardcore of football supporters for whom the option to stand or the option not to stand wasn't palatable. And the Safe Standing campaign has existed in some degree basically for, you know, 25, 26 odd years. And in the last sort of maybe 10, 12 years, we've been much more organized and within the Safe Standing group, there are people who set up separate groups. So there's a group called Stand Up, Sit Down, who were some guys that started looking at some pragmatic, practical ways of dealing with standing and seated areas kind of 10 years ago. There are various people from various message boards. There's a guy called John Darch who runs something called the Safe Standing Roadshow, which takes a technology called rail seating up and down the road to clubs to show them some of the available technologies now, and a number of other individuals as well. And my job is to try and kind of get all of them pulling in the same direction and, you know, make sure that we've got a strategy and that we're working to that strategy, which is pretty much like pushing water up a hill sometimes, as you can imagine. But it's good fun and they're a good bunch of people. And we're doing quite serious work and making some progress, but we have a giggle along the way as well.
That's great. Fantastic. And from Crew Alexandria, our mate Dave Tomlinson has joined us. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Dave.
Hi, guys. Yeah, well, I'm in my real-world life, away from football. I'm a train driver in England, which I'll be doing later on today. Can't wait. Over the Christmas period, taking all you sober and drunk people around the country today. in my footballing life, a few little hats. Same with Peter, our volunteer with the Football Supporters Federation, which I think is one of the most important things I do, to be fair, because really I class it as like a union for football fans. And some of the big wins that the Football Supporters Federation have got in the last 12 months, 2 years, have been incredible. And I think they're so well respected within football now. It's magnificent. So that's one of the things I do. I'm also what's called the Supporters Liaison Officer at Crew Alexandra as well, which is a club that I support, and I travel home and away for my sins at the moment because we're pretty poor. And the trip to Morecambe tomorrow is going to be horrendous the way we're playing presently. But we will be there, you know, sort of like looking through fingers, trying to pray that they score, but I'm not 100% certain we will. So, yes, so that's me, guys. Looking forward to being involved today, and also looking forward to hearing what your views are on safe standing from across, you know, in Russia and in America, and also some of the up-to-date stuff that Peter's been doing.
Fantastic. Welcome to the show. And joining us once again from TMN Russia, our award-winning blogger of the year, Mr. Andrew Flint. How are you, Andrew?
Not too bad, Jim. Not too bad. I'm really, really looking forward to this. This in particular, like Dave mentioned, there's plenty of viewpoints from Russia and bits of evidence I'll throw out there. But yeah, I mean, I'm based out here. I've been here for 7 years, and there's a very different sort of fan culture and atmosphere on the territories. So, you know, I'll be able to give a slightly different angle on it. And of course, that'll be interesting with the World Cup coming up. But yeah, I do, you know, write for These Football Times. And I'm here for the long run in Russia. And I really am enjoying getting to know the clubs well, because I know clubs at different levels here, from the, you know, the non-league level to second, third tier to Premier League clubs, including the big guns in Moscow. So there's plenty to be discussed from my local standpoint, but also my experiences in England. My local club, where my parents are from, is Altrincham. Yeah, they had a pretty interesting history in the 60s, 70s as FA Cup giant killers. And going on the terraces there is actually one of my favourite things to do when I'm back in England. A very different experience. So anyway, I'm really looking forward to this discussion and seeing what you guys have to say.
So my initial foray into English footballing culture was at Stamford Bridge. And Chelsea was in the second division at the time. And I stood in the terraces back then as a young man. And it was a pretty daunting task to make your way through that crowd. And to be honest with you, you know, there is a fear factor for people like me who had, you know, I'm now in my 50s, and for me to go back into that environment would be intimidating, to say the least. So, Pete, help me out there. Why would it not be intimidating at this point for someone like me to go into that environment?
It's a great question, Jim. I think the first thing to say is anybody who went anywhere near Stamford Bridge in the late 70s or early 1980s would have been intimidated regardless of where in the ground they were from. Stamford Bridge was a frankly horrible place to visit sometimes at that period. I think one of the things that we need to do in this discussion is to be very clear about what safe standing is and what safe standing isn't. And what safe standing isn't in any way is a return to anything like the kind of mass baying terraces of the 1980s. We've all seen the footage on the TV. Some of us are old enough and ugly enough to have sort of stood in some of these areas. And, you know, the whole shtick where you've got 10,000 people in one end with surges, when, you know, goal goes in, everybody pushes forward, people getting crushed backwards and forwards, you know, yeah, that is completely terrifying. And nobody is talking about that as safe standing. Nobody's talking about moving back to that. There's been a lot of changes in football since Hillsborough. A lot of them have been massively positive. And stadium safety's been at the vanguard of those changes. And I think if you look now at what the government class as safe terracing areas, and let's not forget that we can have safe standing already in this country in Leagues 1 and 2, where you've got about 20-odd clubs who still have terracing provision. And they have a document called the Green Guide, which lays out in a lot of detail how many people can go in each area, how big the rails have to be, how often you need to have rails, and all of these architectural features that allow for fans to stand in comfort and safety in an area that is nothing like the terraces of the sort of 70s and 80s. I think my history as a Sunderland fan is that I started going to the game back at Roker Park, and the first few games games I watched were with, you know, with sort of grandparents and uncles and various kind of older people from the seats. And then as soon as I was able, as soon as I was kind of a teenager and old enough to go on my own or go with my mates, we went straight for the standing area behind the goal, which was called the Fulwell End. That was very similar. It was one of the big old terraces, you know, loads and loads of people in it, lots of movement. At the time, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. For me, that was kind of the most fun I could have in a week. And looking back, I kind of think if that was my kid going into it now, all of the little crushes, all of the kind of the things that went on in there, you know, I wouldn't be happy about my sending my kids in there. So that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something completely different.
So, Dave, is crew considering safe standing, or do they already have it?
No, the ground at crew at the moment is completely seated. We're in Division 2 at the moment, and I think a lot of clubs will have problems financially, taking seats out, putting standing areas back in, because just the money isn't about. I mean, actually, the game I'm going to tomorrow, Morecambe versus Crewe, there's a standing area already. That I'll be in the terracing tomorrow. That's the away section tomorrow. Listening to some of the things Pete said there, a couple of things I've jotted down, you know, there's no doubt about it, listening to your views as well, Jim. It was frightening in the 70s and 80s, but football in general has moved on, and I think stewarding has improved massively. The safety inside football grounds has improved massively, and I think any standing areas are dealt with so differently these days than they were in the 70s and 80s and 90s. So I think there'll be an improvement there, but obviously, you know, I don't want to go to a game and be frightened for my safety. So I think the work that Peter's doing and the guys are doing with the Safe Standing campaign is something that we should all get behind, because we need to get it right so that when the standing at the bigger grounds, the Premier League grounds and all the big grounds in the world really comes back, we need to get this right.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll certainly get into the financial aspect. That's one area I wanted to touch on. But, you know, Andrew, I know that you've also visited grounds in Russia where they allow standing. What do you see as the difference in Russia or other countries as compared with what you've experienced in England?
Well, I think the best example would be CSKA Moscow's new stadium at CSKA Arena. They have two safe standing terraces behind the goals there. And I went to a game most recently, about 3 weeks ago, and the stadium holds about, say, 30,000-35,000. But the nature, the geographical nature of Russia means that away fans just, there are very, very few. Now, the team I was watching were from Yekaterinburg, which is about 1,500 kilometres away. There were perhaps 30-40 fans in the away section. And the away fans section was safe standing, and the main CSKA Moscow stands, that was safe standing too. But there were only about 7,000-8,000 fans in the stadium. But the atmosphere was absolutely electric. Honestly, pound for pound, I'd say it's the best atmosphere I'd ever experienced in football in any country at any level. Now, the reputation of Russian fans, we've seen most recently in the summer in Marseille, obviously the horrific scenes we saw there. There is a huge, huge difference between the European away trip and the focus of it being against England in the Euros was just a recipe for disasters we saw. With the aggression and the violence, but domestically in Russia, there isn't that same scene. And I'm really, really pleased to see that a big club in Russia has gone for safe standing behind both goals, because the atmosphere and the connection between the fans and the players and the clubs is the major problem in Russia, and this is going a long, long way to solving that, in my view. Now, I mean, I've not stood in safe standing terraces, certainly in large stadium before. My experience of standing has been, you know, Booth and Crescent about 15 years ago, I went to a game, the Gay Meadow in Shrewsbury, and there were a few crash barriers in the stand. And I went to the, I don't know if you guys remember, but Shrewsbury beat Everton 2-1 in the FA Cup. Nigel Jemson scored a couple. I mean, he was one of the most limited strikers I'd seen around, but he got the two important ones. And then we drew Chelsea in the next round. I was at school in the town, you see, and there was a queue of thousands of people to get tickets. And in that terrorist, the Everton game, it was, you know, elements of what you guys both described was, you know, it was there, the thrill of it, it was definitely there. But looking back, it was potentially not the most comfortable atmosphere. There were too many people. And it was the game, and it was a crumbling old stadium, or was, I should say. So for safe standing, I think we've got to look at both sides of it. There is a very, very sensitive issue, or a number of issues that need to be safely addressed. And I think they are being done. We've seen it in Germany. We've seen it Celtic, and I've seen it myself in Moscow. If it's dealt with in the right way, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't have the right sort of effect. Because let's look at it from a number of perspectives. The safety is obviously paramount. That's the first thing. But the atmosphere and the connection between fans and the club and the teams they support, that's also got to be a factor too, I think. It's not as, of course, it's not. It doesn't take precedence over the safety of fans, but the atmosphere and the connection has got to be there too. And this is what I think is critical. If those two can be married, I think it could be a real turning point, I think, for the way fans follow clubs. So I'm massively behind it if it's done in the right way. You know, out here in Russia, it's not quite such a direct issue. You know, we see the stadiums in England are filled, you know, 90% plus in the Premier League and possibly Championship too, I guess. Over here, the stadiums are not filled so much, but even still, there's a place for it. It will improve the stadiums. So I'm personally a fan at this point.
So, Pete, when we talk about safety, you know, one of the things, the last time I went to Stamford Bridge was a couple of years ago, and if I stood up to cheer something, I was immediately, you know, told by a steward to sit back down in my seat. You know, I mean, it's gotten to the point in the Premier League where, you know, even cheering on your side is almost seen as a criminal offense. it's, you know, how do we find the balance, I guess, in all of this, and how does safe standing play into that?
So I think there's one of the things that we need to look at is actually what is the link between standing and safety, and I don't just mean standing areas. I mean the way that actually people operate in an all-seated stadium and what's going on safety-wise. There's no real data on this. There's very little in the way of safety records that are kept at particularly UK stadia. People do keep overall accident reports and they keep overall statistics about how many people required medical attention, but they don't necessarily categorize which part of the ground they were from. So in areas where you've got standing areas and seated areas, you can't really tell. And they don't really say what was the cause of the treatment in a lot of cases. And it tends to be stuff like people not getting hot drinks over each other and scalding each other, or somebody tripping over on a step. So firstly, we're in a vacuum of data, and one of the things that we've been arguing about is actually one of the great things about the Celtic trial, and one of the reasons we've been pushing for a trial is to look at this empirically with a data focus. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you've highlighted a great example there of, you know, matches going on, you stand up, have a shout at somebody or other, the stewards come over, tell you to sit down. And this is the way, up until probably 2 or 3 years ago, this is the way that stewards and police before them had been told to deal with standing and persistent standing. And actually, in a lot of grounds, it caused more trouble than it solved, because actually all that happened was Fans got annoyed. There were flashpoints between stewards and fans, and you end up with a piece of civil disobedience, or you end up with a kind of flashpoint. If you actually look at the safety side of it, and what's safe and what isn't, most people who are in seated areas most of the time sit down. The times they're on their feet are when they're coming into the stadium, when their team scores a goal, or when there's an exciting passage of play, maybe when there's a corner or a free kick on the edge of the area. And at those stages, they're leaping up and down, jumping up, gesticulating, shouting, swearing, whatever it is, and then when they leave again. There's only one piece of independent risk assessment done into standing at seated areas in the UK, and it was done by, done on behalf of Trafford Borough Council. And it looked at all of this, and it decided that the only time, or the times when football fans were most at risk from safety issues from standing, were what they called moments of high excitement. So precisely those moments when a goal goes in, people leap up, or kind of, you know, when something happens, when there's a red card or an incident on the pitch, when fans naturally can kind of stand up, and that moving from seated to standing, particularly where there are shelves in front of them, or where they can fall off a tier, or they can fall down, that's a problem. And then the other problems are moments of access and egress, so coming into the ground and getting out of the ground. Now, in current directives of how to steward a game, they are precisely the times when football fans are allowed to stand. So we don't think the existing rules actually, you know, protect football supporters from any particular safety issues. I think the other thing to say is, about 5 or 6 years ago, probably a bit more, it got to the stage where, you know, the elephant in the room in English football for years and years has been that, you know, we've had all seated stadia since sort of post Hillsborough, but actually football fans have stood in thousands, and that number has been growing, particularly over the last decade. And it's got to the stage now, got to the stage 5 or 6 years ago, where we've broken some meetings in pubs between football clubs and supporters groups, where the situation, the standoff between the stewards and the fans got so bad that the clubs basically said, look, we have to, by law, be seen to be trying to police this. If we don't send the stewards in when you guys stand up, we get into trouble, we get attendances get cut, we get all sorts of sanctions taken out against us. We have to send the stewards in. We recognise that some of you want to stand. We don't have a problem with it as long as we can manage it. So why don't we say that this block at the back of this stand is a standing area, and we'll call it a singing section, and anybody who wants to stand persistently during the game can go in there. Because of the legislation, we'll send our stewards in, and we'll try and get you to sit down. And when we do, either sit down or one of you can start singing, stand up if you love, whatever the team you're supporting is. And at that point, we'll give up and walk out. But we've been seen to be doing our job, so nobody can impose sanctions on us, and everybody's happy. And actually, for the last 5 or 6 years, at most clubs in the Premier League, that's pretty much what's gone on. And it's pragmatic, it works. It solves the big problem in English football, which has been of people who don't want to stand or haven't been able to stand, having people standing in front of them. If people can actually organise this and have areas where people who want to stand can go, it solves a whole load of problems. And you know what? In all of that time where people have been standing in seated areas, there haven't been any significant safety issues. So either we've been massively lucky for the last decade, or actually standing up in seated areas probably isn't as risky as many have led us to believe that it is as well.
So Dave, you say you're going to be standing tomorrow for the match. Have you experienced other matches where you've stood in standing areas in recent matches, like in the last couple of years?
Oh yeah, in the lower leagues in England, there's numerous clubs that have standing areas. Accrington Stanley is another team that comes to mind straight away that still has standing areas. I'm sure Pete's probably got a list tattooed on the inside of his head of clubs in England that have got standing areas. But yeah, I've stood many a time. I prefer to stand, to be fair. And as Pete was just saying, it's interesting that when you watch even Premiership games on the TV these days, not that I go to too many anymore, but the majority of the fans do want to stand. You know, I mean, what I interestingly watched the Liverpool-Manchester City game last night, and the camera Sean over Vincent Kompany standing in the away section of the ground yesterday, and lo and behold, he was standing up. So so that's, you know, I mean, but I've stood. I mean, the slight difference is, fortunately, with the League Two in England, is that the crowds are nothing like what they get in the Premiership. So the safety side is a lot less, but you still get the same spirit between the supporters, you know. And I think, realistically, if you sat everyone down, as Pete was saying, in the pub, football supporters, they want the standing to come back. I mean, one of the things that probably a supporter would say in general is that a seat would be dearer than the standing section. And football, inherently now, unfortunately, is becoming more and more expensive day in and day out. Although, you know, the 2020 plenty's campaign that the FSF are doing is, you know, has worked wonders, and what they did last year and what the Premier League have gone along with, that capped away tickets at £30 is a start. So that makes football cheaper. But I think what supporters are looking at is, right, you know, we're struggling here. We're struggling every week to turn up, pay the money to go into the grounds. How can we make it more value for money? But yeah, in League Two and in League One, there's grounds where you go. And actually, I think sometimes some people much prefer to go to these grounds. Fleetwood is another one in the lower two leagues. And if you go down the next league in the National League, Andrew was talking about Altrincham. A lot of grounds in the National League have got standing areas. And in fact, in some of the non-league grounds now, depending on the policing and security issues, at half time, if your team's kicking the other way, when your team changes hands, they walk round the ground.
Really?
Obviously, isn't. Yeah. So they walk round the ground and just stand behind the goal where your team's kicking into. So, I mean, I want it back, but obviously, listening to what Peter's saying, and Peter's got all the stats and he's the expert, we want it done safely, but I think it can be done safely now. It seems as though the right people in government and the right experts have suddenly, the light bulb's flashed on inside the heads now. You know, and when over the last couple of weeks, I've been reading that Manchester United have been asking questions of their own fans about it. When clubs like that are now starting to ask these questions, then maybe the penny's dropped a little bit now, and it's something that we don't have to have seats. That isn't the safest way to do it. As Pete said, people stand up and stand in areas now, and, you know, the statistics are not there that people are getting injured by standing up.
Well, I've been reading about the technology of the convertible seats. So they lock into place for standing areas, but then they convert into seats, I guess, for European play. I assume that's what it's for. Is that what you experienced, Andrew, at CSKA? Or was it purely a standing area, or were those seats convertible?
The ones in Moscow are convertible ones, just like the ones you see at Celtic Park. I mean, it's a brand new state-of-the-art stadium, and there is absolutely no way you would make those. I mean, we're talking about the core group of, you know, self-styled ultras that stand in that area. There's no way anybody, no matter what the law says, no matter what the stewarding is like, would make them sit down. So it really was the only option available to the design of the stadium. And, you know, the different atmosphere is, you know, it's the people who go to stadiums in Russia are genuinely more, I say pound for pound, more, you know, dedicated supporters, because there's not so much of a culture of being a football fan across the whole country. So the ones who go to the stadium are the ones who really actually want to be there. They want to support the team. So the ones in Moscow, it's the convertible ones that, you know, we've seen in Dortmund and some of the other German grounds, and Celtic Park, the same type. But, you know, I mean, you know, Dave mentioned about the lower leagues in England, and I think, I mean, my experience is less recent, but I still have spent a fair bit of time on the terraces at Moss Lane at Altrincham. I think there's two separate issues, or not issues, but two separate ways of looking at it. We're talking Premier League, or you could even say the top two flights and lower league standard. Moss Lane, in my time, has never been packed full. It was 30, 40 years ago, you know, the FA Cup runs, but there may have been other games when I haven't attended, but it's certainly not regularly full by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, that was just one of my favourite experiences of going to a game. I remember Greg Young being at centre-back about, I don't know, 5, 6 years ago. You know, good left foot on him, but not the most cultured lad, bless him. And he absolutely wellied the ball into the far corner when he had no pressure on him. And I yelled at the top of my voice, "What the..." fill in the word. "What the F are you doing, Greg?" And he turned round, because it went quiet at that point, but he turned round and looked at me and said, "Because the gaffer told me to." You wouldn't get that sort of... It honestly, I swear to God, it really was like that. You wouldn't get that opportunity if it was a very sanitised, all-seater atmosphere. Now, of course, it's not relevant to the to Altrincham's level, because they're never going to need an all-seater stadium, because they won't have that many fans coming. But that's a separate issue. The bigger stadium is, I think, really what we're talking about here. Now, I mean... You know, the terraces in Russia, the stands of any description in Russia, there isn't much movement other than, you know, the really big games, the Zenit St. Petersburg against Spartak Moscow, and there have been flashpoints there. But that's mostly been outside the stadium. Any violence or aggression has been on the... There's been reports of the St. Petersburg metro system being fairly unsavoury. Place. I've not been myself, I've not experienced it, but it's fairly well known. Inside the stadium, there's a lot of police presence, even at the lower league level. You know, when I went to third tier football here, my local club here, Tumen, there were, at one point, there were almost more police surrounding the pitch than actual fans in the stadium. So clearly it's a law that's been set out to stage a sporting event in Russia. You've got to have, and I'm talking police, not stewards at this point. There are stewards in the stands, but police ringing the stadiums, ringing the pitch, sorry. So people know it's almost a bit over the top, but it does serve the purpose of people knowing just no point trying to be violent if you wanted to be. So the troublemakers don't cause any issues. But movement around the stand, you know, getting out of your seat, it's, you know, it will happen. Just like Dave said, I'm in Dave's corner entirely. I want to stand most of the time, you know, and if there's a moment that gets the pulse racing, you want it. Well, it's not that you want to, you just instinctively do. You stand up, you show your support. And there is a different culture of the way fans watch the game, but the issues are still the same. People are the same. They're fans. They want to watch the team, and you want to not think permanently, "Oh, right, I've got to sit down again straight away." And there should be room for that. You know, the crowd trouble is just not, and hasn't for quite some time in Russia domestically, been an issue. So I'm not saying there hasn't been violence related to football, but it's not a stadium issue. And I think really that CSKA's example is one that will be followed by some of the new stadia that are being built in Russia. I think it's an example that will be proven to be very sensible, will improve the atmosphere in a safe way. So I think it's an example we'll see that will happen more around this country. I hope so, at least.
Jim, if I can just jump in there. A couple of times, Andrew, you mentioned this idea of atmosphere and particularly the connection between the supporters and the players. And I think that's a really, really important point. And I think there's a bit of research done. It's probably about 5 years old now, but it started about 15 years ago. And what they did is they looked at the average age of season ticket holders at the Newcastle United, who, aside from being the evil lords of darkness, have been a Premier League club for quite some time. And I think the average age, off the top of my head, it was like 30 or 35. And then 10 years later, they redid the exercise, and the average age of supporters was either 40 or 45. It had literally just aged 10 years. And what they were finding was that there wasn't a huge number of new young fans coming into the grounds. they found that a load of fans came to the games with their parents, and then when they got to kind of university age or, you know, leaving home age, they stopped coming. And particularly in the last sort of 5 or 6 years, I mean, anecdotally, and I get that anecdote isn't the plural of data, but anecdotally, you know, I walk around the middle of Sunderland on a match day when Sunderland are playing away, and I can go to 5 or 6 different pubs, all of whom are showing the game on a foreign satellite feed, and I'm walking to those pubs, and there will probably be a bunch of kids aged 18 to, well, probably a bit younger, actually, 18 to kind of 25, 26, all of whom are in there having 5 or 6 pints, standing up with their mates, having a giggle. It's a relatively cheap afternoon. It's a damn sight easier than driving 250 miles to get to the away game. And what, you know, if I was running this game in this country, I would be sitting there seriously worried about where these young fans are going to come from. Where is the next generation of fans coming? Added to that, you've got the way that the game works now. Players stay at clubs for less time. More players visit more clubs. There's less of a connection anyway, I think, between fan bases and their players. Used to be in the 80s and 90s, probably half of the Sunderland team were from the region, either from Sunderland itself, the city, or from, you know, the northeast. Nowadays, you know, we've got Jordan Pickford, who's famously come into the first team. He's from Washington, just up the road. Great young goalkeeper, absolutely cracking prospect. You know, we've had Jordan Henderson come through, who's from Liverpool now. But actually, they're the exception, not the rule now. And if you just look at kind of, you know, how expensive it's getting, the fact that there's not that connection there, I think one of the great things that standing areas provide is they provide this kind of this opportunity to key into what the younger fans really seem to value. And I think, you know, Andrew mentioned it in passing with the whole ultra movement. It's no surprise that the ultra movement has started to gain ahead of steam in this country over the last 10 years. It as a response to rising ticket prices, to poor atmospheres, to the increasing kind of, you know, capitalism in football, the increasing, you know, move to sort of finances and everything about football being about money. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why standing now is timely is because, you know, if you look at what happened at Celtic, the reason Celtic got standing at Celtic Park is because basically the council turned up to a few games, the local safety advisory group, and they saw the ultras in the corner who were standing in a seated area in the corner of the stand, having a right old time, jumping up and down, you know, crowd surfing the kids over to the front, and when the goals went in, everybody went bananas. Having a brilliant time, but the ground wasn't built for it, and they were terrified that there was going to be some kind of safety issue. So they said to Celtic, look, you guys go away, find a solution to this problem, because you're either going to have to kick all of those fans out of the ground, or you need to find a solution. So Celtic went away. They looked at it. They looked at all of these technologies that we've been talking about, the combination seating, this idea that you can have an area that is, you know, palpably safe for standing because there is a rail every row or every two rows. For UEFA games, because it's still UEFA rules that you have to have all seated stadia, they can take a key along and unlock the seats, and it can convert into a seating area. Of course, in reality, all the fans in the area do is take the seats back up and stand up anyway. But it satisfies the requirements, and they kind of looked at all that, and they came back to the council and said, look, yeah, this is clearly the best thing to do, because we're not going to stop them standing, but this controls how they stand, and it allows them to do it in a way that is sort of safe for them to do. And what's been really interesting is if you speak to the guys at Celtic about what they found, everybody was terrified when the trial started. That I mean, anybody who knows anything about the cultural demographics of the UK will recognise that that Celtic or Glasgow generally is not the most middle class place in the planet. And if ever anything's going to kick off at a football game, you know, it's going to be at an Old Firm derby. It's going to be at a place like Celtic. So everybody was terrified that actually one of the arguments about safety that people throw at standing is does standing encourage people to behave worse? Can it lead to contagion? So if you've got people kind of standing up and being a bit more raucous and naughty, does that kind of spill over into the areas beside it? And one of the really fascinating things is because the Celtic fans and these ultras, these young kids who kind of, you know, hard to reach by the authorities, because they know that everybody's looking at them, and if there are any problems, they will take the standing away. The instances of self-policing in the Celtic area have gone through the roof. So we had a couple of young lads a few weeks ago who brought some alcohol in, which in UK grounds sadly isn't allowed. And they got shot by their own fans. Some people said, look, basically that's not cool. If we get found with alcohol in this thing, the whole thing's going to get shut down. We don't want that. So they basically gathered up all the alcohol, took it to stewards, said, somebody's brought this in. Can you take it out, please? And that's fantastic. And I think, you know, the whole standing debate is culturally relevant now. And I think the whole culture of how it will be handled if it does come in is a really interesting area and leads us on to, you know, so many different avenues for discussion now.
That's pretty fascinating, because what we see here in the U.S. is more young fans than I would say the demographic is probably mid-20s to mid-30s is the most popular group that's showing up at the matches. Now, you know, you can get into a match here for, you know, less than 20 pounds. So, but we also have, you know, they're not called standing areas, but they are essentially bleacher type seats. They don't have seats. They're just a long row you sit down on, but generally it's in the end, and the fans stand, and, you know, they have drums and they have, you know, musical instruments, and they have a lot of beer, and they generally just kind of cause mayhem, you know, pretty harmless mayhem. But you know, there isn't really a culture of violence or hooliganism surrounding the football matches here. So it's quite a different footballing culture here in the U.S. than either Russia or England. And the stewards really don't play into it at all. They don't, you know, unless a fight were to break out or somebody were to throw something onto the field, you wouldn't see a steward go into action at all. They really just kind of check to make sure you're seated in the right section, and that's about all they do. But when we're talking about this, you know, I keep coming back to, you know, Dave and your experiences, you know, standing, and, you know, do you find that it's younger people who are standing, or is it the old guard, you know, the guys who used to stand and love to stand and they feel it's their birthright?
Do you know, I think it's interesting because what Crew Alex did last year is they set up a singing section due to the fact that, as Peter said a lot earlier, the stewards were relaxing, if you like, their rules somewhat, where they were going in all the time and asking supporters to sit down. There was a group that was getting bigger and bigger, relatively in relation to the numbers that we've got on Crew, who were standing up, and that is the younger element. But it's interesting now that group is set in a certain section of the stand, and interestingly, the other thing I was going to mention is that the players of the club have realised how important that is, because the new captain has come together and went to the manager off his own back and asked that if all the fines that the players have put into over the course of the season so far can be put together, and so they can purchase a drum that they can give to the supporters. And they did that about 3 or 4 weeks ago. They took that drum to the supporters, handed it over, put the captain himself on social media and asked would somebody be interested in the drum. And that's been played every game now. Not that it's helping the team in any way, shape or form. In fact, it's making it worse, to be fair. So they should get rid of it. But actually, what I'm also noticing in certain sections of the ground, as you've just said, probably more experienced supporters, they are starting to just maybe, oh, actually, if they're allowing us to stand, I'll stand. But certainly at away games, it's interesting because the demographic is totally thrown out tomorrow. Because there will be an option at Morecambe tomorrow to go in the standing areas or the seating areas. And you'll find that everyone will want to go in the standing areas. There may be, to start with, there may be a cost issue, but it's not a massive amount. I would suggest to you that the older end of the support, they probably do still want to sit down. You know, they feel more comfortable sitting down. They maybe, their thoughts maybe go back to what you said right at the start, Jim, about safety and things like that. Not that those type of things happen at all, and they'll be just as safe. But yeah, the away games, everybody wants to stand up. So, you know, maybe the home games, yeah, I would go along with it, that it probably is. Certainly the singing sections, it is the younger element, the age group that you mentioned, the 23 to 33. But actually away games, it's everybody, you know, it's all age groups. So, I mean, I don't know whether Pete or Andrew has seen that, but it's interesting in my view that basically everybody wants the away games are treated slightly differently. Certainly crew games are, because they've come up with a really interesting way to get people to stand up. They basically play absolutely rubbish. So it's not that everybody wants to stand up at high moments of excitement. They just want to stand up and go home, even after about 5 minutes, because it's utter rubbish. So they're trying to do things a little bit differently, their own little safe standing campaign. But, you know, it's the guys who want to stand up, you know, they certainly at away games, the one thing I've found with not just crew fans, but with a lot of lower league fans, and they're the guys that I come into contact with regularly, they don't just want to go to the game. They class the whole day as their trip. You know, you can speak to pretty much every club. And if a Northern team is going down to London, wow, that's the one. You know, 2 or 3 months before, when the train tickets become available, the cheap train tickets, they're on the internet getting the cheaper train tickets. They're on the phone organising it. Who's going? You know, I mean, I'm hearing stories that some people come in and there's an itinerary of pubs they want to go in before the game and things like this. So that's, you know, in the lower leagues, maybe you can do that a bit more than maybe following Sunderland, but maybe next year, Pete, Sunderland might just start becoming closer to us, so you can
steady, Dave, steady.
but interestingly, one of the things that I'm involved with through this Football Supporters Federation is I'm a team member of the Fans Embassy with the England team, and actually, that the demographics when you go to England games, pretty much everybody wants to stand up there as well, to be fair. You know, what my experience is pretty much the lower league regularly, week in and week out. And I don't really come across the Premier League experience that much. But what I do see at the England games, away England games, then, you know, people do want to stand up. Pretty much there's not many games where the fans are not standing up. And the other thing as well that always amuses me is that you might get a ticket going to an England away game which says you need to sit in row 36, section L, seat 3, but no one ever sits in them seats, and then one poor person comes along and wants to sit in that seat, and that really throws a kilt. That, you know, that there's disaster written all over that. So that's where I experience it, but the age group of the England support, the guys that want to stand up, doesn't fit in with the demographics you were saying in America, Jim. It, you know, pretty much everybody, from the young ones to the old ones. So my experience is interesting. My experience is two-tone because I get a little bit of what happens in the Premiership through the international football. But in the lower leagues, it is totally different, the experience that you get, than in the Premiership.
Yeah, the experience we get at the national level is a little different too. They, you know, there's a group called the American Outlaws that believes in something called the free beer movement, which I still don't understand. But I
can, Jim. I can really understand, and I think that's brought to every single club all over the world.
Well,
the revolution, I say.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea. I just, you know, I just don't know how it works out.
Jim, if I can just because you asked a direct question, I'm sorry to say I'm the kind of tedious individual that actually looks at stats for this kind of thing. So I actually know the demographic breakdown for Celtic, which is obviously the only one that we've got in the UK. And that is basically approximately 25% of the standing area is under 18. And that's a good mix of 5% under 13, 10% 13 to 16, and 10% 17 to 18. About 70% is 18 to 65. We don't have a breakdown of what the spread is there, but I imagine it's heavily skewed towards people in their 20s. And then you've got about 5% 65 plus. So I think there is compelling evidence that it is very much that younger demographic that you spoke about that you see in the US. And actually, there's a good mix of women and men as well, which is quite interesting.
That is fascinating. Good stuff. Well, listen, guys, as we kind of start to wind this thing down, I want to ask each of you to kind of give us your final thoughts, as well as if you'd like to share information about how our listeners can get information about each of you, if you'd like to share that. I'll start with you, Dave. Any final thoughts on the topic?
I think my view is very much whatever support any football fan in England and around the globe really can give to this subject to make it more well known, more in the face of the people who are the decision makers, is something that we must do. You know, the work that Peter has done and the guys have done is phenomenal, really. And I'm in a very lucky position that, you know, I go to meetings with Peter on a lot of other subjects. And, you know, I find out some things. And it's phenomenal the work that volunteers in football, not just on this subject, but on a lot of subjects, are able to do with sheer determinedness, sheer, you know, they really, really want it. The skills that some volunteers involved in this project and a lot of projects within the football fan base is incredible. And, you know, I'd love to be able to pull it together and make it a business or a government, because I think we'd be fantastic. But you know, I want to work and I'll support it massively, and anything that anybody can do, any support, that just needs to get in touch with Pete, really. And on my own thing, really, you know, I would love the thousands of people that are watching this podcast, even if they just Google Crewe Alexandra, and then all of a sudden have them as their second team, because, you know, the little clubs need people that are interested in them to keep them going. And, you know, if anybody ever wants to get in touch with me about any of the stuff that we do, you know, and they can't get in touch with Pete, it's not a problem. I'm on Twitter at Crewe Alex Fan. Feel free to get in touch with me. Not a problem in the slightest.
That's fantastic. And I love the fact that every time Crewe Alex comes up, you know, it's always, oh, you know, the trains, you know. Everybody in Crewe must work for the trains, right? It seems that way. And I know you do, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's two reasonably big industries in Crewe. It's the trains or it's Bentley cars. So if you've got a Bentley and you want to get involved with Crewe, that would be really good, because that would be helpful in the coming years. If you can afford a Bentley, then you can definitely afford to be my friend.
Oh, yeah, I've got two of them in the garage downstairs. Andrew, my friend, some last thoughts here.
Well, for me, the safety is, like I said, obviously is the first priority. But for me, the part that that's a given. We're not discussing whether safety is something we need to focus on. That's just automatic. For me, it's the connection with the fans that I'm most interested to see. And I'm not just the safe standing, but every aspect of it. And I genuinely do see whatever the most secure solution is, and if it's the rail season we've seen at Celtic, for example, whether that's the answer, I see that being the core of it. Because, you know, I grew up as a Manchester United fan. I went to my first game the first season after the Stretford End Terrace was taken down, and the all-seater, in fact, the first game I went to, I think the Stretford End was still being redeveloped. I never got that experience on a mass scale. And every time I've been to a lower league ground or I've been in a ground where I've been allowed to stand, I've just felt something different, that I've really, something really, really thorough and enjoyable. And I think that's what football is to be about. That, without being too cheesy, you know, you've got to have a love for the game. Otherwise, you're not going to be a long-term supporter. You're not going to, you know, the players are going to think, well, you know, who is this crowd? You are the poor sandwich eaters. That's not what the players want to play in front of. That's not what's going to keep people coming back to a club. It's particularly relevant in Russia. Like I mentioned, there's a real problem with this connection with the fans. So I'm massively behind a discussion on the matter at the very least. And I don't see how anybody could not be. And, you know, in preparation for this, I did a bit of reading around, and the obvious delicate area is, of course, you know, Hillsborough and the Liverpool supporters groups. And what I found interesting is that it appears that at least some of the Hillsborough supporters groups are at least prepared to enter into a full discussion about it without committing one way or the other at the moment, as far as I understand, at least. And that, for me, is hugely encouraging on so many levels, because it's, you know, it can't be avoided. If a Hillsborough supporters group looked at the options and they were presented with all of the statistics and they were convinced of it, it would sway a lot of opinion. But as long as we focus on what is most important, safety obviously, but the connection with players and fans, if that can be improved, if we could get more conversations with the Greg Youngs of this world in the middle of a game and tell him to stop hoofing the ball into the corner, you know, I mean, I'm joking, but I will always remember that. I will always remember that afternoon at Moss Lane. I'm a Manchester United fan, I always will be. But that afternoon where I had a conversation with a player in the middle of a game on the pitch, that will never leave me. And I would hope as many young fans, or fans of all ages, but young fans in particular, will have those sort of moments, because, you know, that's what it's about. So, anyway, that's what I hope. I'm definitely in support of the discussion being taken further. I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, me, I on Twitter at Andrew M.I.J. Flint, even Twitter itself is part of the connection, I find. So, you know, if anybody is interested in Russian football and the atmosphere out here and the fans, I'd love to be involved in any discussion. And, you know, I do find myself defending Russia a lot, because there are a lot of misconceptions about this country. There are a lot of problems too, admittedly, but the atmosphere in stadiums, inside stadiums at least, is, in my opinion, second to none at the big grounds. And safe standing has been central to that. So that's my post. That's my final.
Yeah, there's been times when I've certainly wanted to have a conversation with Branislav Ivanovic. I've yelled at the TV a lot, trying to get his attention. So, Pete, give you the last word here today.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, so I think the moment for this conversation is now in the UK. It's really timely that we're talking about this today. I think for the last 6 or 7 years, we've looked enviously at Germany, and other parts of Europe as standing spread through Norway, Sweden, Holland, and it's been getting progressively closer and closer to the UK. And then obviously when Celtic opened 2,800 capacity standing area at the start of this season, you know, I can drive there from my house and be there before I could get to London. So it's very much put itself on the agenda. At the same time, I think, you know, Andrew mentioned the Hillsborough stuff. We're only a couple of months away from the findings of the Hillsborough inquests, where the Hillsborough families have put together a staggering 25-year campaign, well, more 26, 27-year campaign, looking for justice for the events that happened in Hillsborough. And one of the big things we've been trying to do for the past couple of years is actually not compete with that. We've never agreed that standing and Hillsborough are one and the same thing. And actually, it's interesting, Andrew's point about the Liverpool groups. He's absolutely right. One of the big Liverpool groups is against standing. They see it as a contributing factor. One of the other ones isn't. And Spirit of Shankly, who are one of the big supporters groups in Liverpool, have recently been debating this at their meetings. One of the things that they've decided to do is actually start having an informed debate about it, because they recognise that the debate's shifted. And again, the elephant in the room is that there is, you know, I know in Anfield where the areas are that you're allowed to stand unofficially, and the areas are that you're going to be forced to sit down. So this idea that Anfield's all standing just simply isn't true. So it's been quite interesting. And now post inquest, it's almost like the brakes have been taken off, and we've had a year and a half when we couldn't really talk about this openly because it was appropriate to give the families their time. And the space to get this done without muddying the issue. And we were all delighted in the response that came out of it and the findings of the inquest, which were finally, you know, represented some level of justice. And, you know, it's incredible, the lies and the cover-ups that were uncovered from the Hillsborough inquests. So where are we now? I guess if you look at the existing situation, in the UK, you've got the chairman of the Football Association, Greg Clark, has come out sort of in his second week of having the job saying, you know what, I'm kind of pro-standing. We should definitely be talking about this stuff. The Football League clubs have voted to make it their policy to lobby the government on it. That was kind of a year and a half, 2 years ago. At the shareholders' meeting of the Premier League clubs in November, they passed a resolution to start thinking about it, and we hope that the next step there will be proper consultation, looking at all of these things that we've very sensibly spoken about, like safety and behaviour and how it actually might happen and what it will do to affect demographics, and will we still get, you know, the increasing numbers of Asian fans and other fans coming to the game, all of which, you know, one of the things about the standing debate is it's always been about choice, it's always been about inclusion. Not everybody wants to stand. But even amongst people who don't themselves want to stand, most people understand the value of standing areas because it allows them to sit in comfort and allows people who want to stand the opportunity to do so. So the Premier League are starting to look at this, and hopefully they're coming round. You've then got government bodies like the Sports Ground Safety Authority, which is the group that advises the government on whether or not or what constitutes a safe area and what doesn't in English stadia, and they're responsible for the licensing of stadia. And they're currently undergoing a rewrite to their green guide, which is the guide that puts everything down to, so the clubs know what to do. And in the 2017 write-up of the green guide, there is for the first time going to be a section on combination seating. And whilst they're not suggesting that this is their new position and everybody should have rail seats or anything like that, it is tacit recognition that it is safe and that actually it is an acceptable alternative for clubs if they so choose. The bigger picture is obviously a lot of the pressure, the downward pressure on standing in the last few years has come from UEFA. And it was very much seen as Platini's bag. It was his kind of big push because Heysel was almost like his Hillsborough. He took the view, the emotive view that, you know, when all the problems happened at Heysel, again, nothing to do with standing. It was to do with decrepit old stadia and lack of safety and an environment where football fans were seen as the problem, not the solution. But he was saying that, you know, as a result of that modern stadia, the English model, he looked at what happened in England post Hillsborough and thought that was the way to go. And I think it's been quite interesting that now Platini's gone, UEFA seem a lot more receptive to this. And you look at a lot of the grounds of clubs that play in the Champions League and in the Euros. And actually, you know, there's a lot of pressure coming from there as well. So it does feel finally like after a quarter of a century, this is a debate that is going to run its course. But ultimately, it's the British government that needs to change this. We don't think it requires primary legislation. If you know anything about English law, it's almost impossible to pass anything and do anything, which is incredibly frustrating. But happily for us, we think that there's something called the statutory instrument that means that the DCMS, which is the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, who ultimately this sits with, can basically change the wording on some documents that go out every year and bring this in. And it's been really interesting, just on a personal level, being active within this area for a few years, to see how the tenor of that discussion has changed. Even 2-3 years ago, we were going to these people, the Premier League, SGSA, DCMS, the police, all of the various authorities who have a say in this, and we were getting straight bad. It was no, 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 it's never going to happen, nobody wants it, it's not safe, blah, 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 blah. Now you speak to them and the whole debate is a different tone. It's all, yeah, you know what, we think there is potentially an opportunity to do this. Let's do it slowly, let's get it right, let's look at it properly. But yeah, fans want it, we want it as well. We see, we recognize this connection thing that Andrew's highlighted is really important. They recognize that, you know, people aren't going to as many away games as they used to, all of that kind of stuff, and they see this as part of the solution for it. So, you know, at the start of this new year, I'm really confident for the first time in a long time that actually we're going to make some progress on this year. And my little dream is, I've got a 6-year-old boy and an 8-year-old girl, and my little dream is, before they get too old to not want to do it, I would love for them to be able to watch Sunderland from a standing area. And for the first time in a long time, I feel really, really enthused and kind of happy that this might actually happen.
That's terrific. Thank you so much. And if people want to get information on your campaign or the FSF, where can they find that, Pete?
So there's a bunch of stuff on the FSF website at fsf.org.uk. I bore everybody to tears on Twitter at Peter Daikin, which is Daikin. And we're pretty, we're pretty visible organization. So, you know, just Google Safe Standing and the FSF and you'll tend to find us. And, you know, we, particularly in the new year, the Premier League, do go out to consultation. We'll be looking at activity at every English Premier League club and every Championship club. We'll want to know what the potential issues are there, what are the positives, what are the negatives. You know, we want supporters to have a really active voice in this consultation process. So the more football fans who are interested in getting involved, the better. We will find a job for you to do, don't you worry about that. And we would love anybody to make contact, get in touch, have a chat, and of course buy me a pint, crucially.
Well, the next time I'm in the Northeast, I will definitely do that. So I want to thank all three of you gentlemen for taking an hour out of your time to spend with us here at These Football Times. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've learned a lot, as I'm sure our listeners also will have learned a lot. Once again, this is the Lob Podcast from These Football Times. Happy New Year, everyone.